morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central on Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking Packers football, and to do that, we have a guest joining us on the line to kick off the show this morning. We have, of Sports Illustrated, Bill Sikin, who's the editor of the newly released book, Green Bay Packers Sports Illustrated, Green, Gold, and Glory. Mr. Sikin, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. We're glad to have you joining us. To kick things off here, Mr. Sikin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You're a former reporter and editor at Sports Illustrated, but as I understand it, you're more involved in the company's book division now.
That's right, yes. I worked from 2002 to 2009 with the magazine, and then for the last few years I've been working on the book division, and yes, Green, Gold, and Glory is our latest release.
Well, let's talk about the book here. For those though who might not know about this recently released publication, can you help describe it to them? It's people hear book, but it's not a narrative. It's more of a coffee table book. But can you tell them what's inside?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's a big book. It's a coffee table book. It has a lot of beautiful photographs.
Welcome back to Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV. I saw during our break that some people were having problems with our live stream broadcast. I apologize if that happened to you. We were just talking to Sports Illustrated's Bill Sikin talking about the book, Sports Illustrated Green Bay Packers Green, Gold, and Glory. It was a great interview. Great to talk to him. He put out a fantastic coffee table book illustrating the history of the Packers, its unique connection to the community, and documenting the history of the Packers from the players, the important games, you name it. It was really, really cool. So thanks to him for joining us, and thanks for you, the listener and the viewer, for joining us. We're going to continue on, though, talking about Packers training camp here on a Friday morning. Just so happens that today is the one and only Packers nighttime practice this year during training camp. So that takes place at Reinicke Field at 7 p.m. this evening, which is kind of nice that the show doesn't overlap with practice today. Technically, you could count tomorrow as a nighttime practice, too, for the Packers' annual intra-squad family night scrimmage at Lambeau Field, but I don't know if you want to count that as practice or a scrimmage or separate, but they do both take place at night. But for the rest of training camp, that's it. It's all morning and afternoon practices from here on out. I don't think anything's afternoon. They do go from the early start time. They've been going at about 8:20 a.m. in the morning. I think they, in another week or two, they kind of switch around to the 11 o'clock hour about. They kind of start getting in the regular season mode where that's kind of their regular practice time most of the year. So they'll be doing that starting in a week or two. But nighttime tonight, underneath the lights, which is really cool. I think it's perhaps an opportunity for more people to come out and watch practice on a Friday night after work, the weekend's here. I wouldn't doubt it at all if tonight is the largest crowd of the year this evening at a Friday night in Green Bay. So if you're going to practice tonight, be prepared for a large crowd. You might want to get your seat early in the stands there at Reinicke Field. But to talk about some of the major storylines as they've happened here, one of the biggest ones is that this Greg Jennings story just won't go away. Greg Jennings apologized to Aaron Rodgers yesterday, but wasn't very sincere in doing so. Didn't think he had a whole lot to apologize for, and said he would not or did not apologize to Aaron Rodgers in person or personally, you know, over the phone or anything like that. So the story kind of continues. Even after Vikings coach Leslie Frazier encouraged Greg Jennings to let the topic die, it just is not. And Greg Jennings is just, you know, seems bitter about his time in Green Bay. And it is a little bit curious, blaming basically Aaron Rodgers for putting the spotlight on himself. And I couldn't disagree more with Greg Jennings on this topic. I have not seen a quarterback do as good a job spreading the ball as Aaron Rodgers does in my time. I have not seen a quarterback do it as well as Aaron Rodgers. And it's amazing. I mean, there's just, in Greg Jennings' time, there was just so many good wide receivers in Green Bay that he couldn't get the ball to everyone all the time. I mean, between, you know, last year, probably the best group of wide receivers maybe in Packers history, with Jennings, with Jordy Nelson, with James Jones, with Randall Cobb, with Donald Driver, throw Jared Boykin in the mix, and you know, don't forget the tight ends, JerMichael Finley, and the rest of them, the running backs taking a few catches here and there. I mean, That's a good group. I mean, you can't. It just baffles me. It baffles me. So that story continues to go on. But if you want to talk about Packers and what's going on in the field, I do think that one of the big storylines to come out of yesterday's practice, it was the kicking competition. It seems to have gotten more attention than it almost deserves or should get, because the Packers in the early going have not been practicing field goals very much. Only the second time over the course of all of training camp. So I think, if I am correct, yesterday was the sixth practice since training camp started, and only the second time they've kicked field goals. So once every third practice on average, to start the year, which I thought was kind of weird. I mean, if you're going to have a competition, let these guys kick a little bit. And they only kick like six field goals at a time. I don't really think you're tiring them out all that much. Although, I mean, when you add kickoffs to the equation as well, certainly putting a little stress on them there. But still, I would have thought, granted, Mike McCarthy says they will pick it up. I think he says every other practice from here on out is about when they'll practice field goals and get kicking. So it is going to pick up a little bit. So after the first time they kicked field goals earlier in training camp, Giorgio Tavecchio, the newcomer, had the advantage. He kicked one more field goal than Mason Crosby. Fast forward to yesterday. Second time they've kicked field goals, Mason Crosby gets the upper hand. He is perfect on field goals, goes 5 for 5, whereas I believe Giorgio Tavecchio goes 5 for 6. But granted, the one field goal Tavecchio missed hit the upright, so he was really close and was given a second chance from the same distance and actually made it afterwards. So by no means has Giorgio Tavecchio been looking bad in the early going. Crosby, though, yesterday, while missing two, I think, earlier in camp, goes perfect 5 for 5 yesterday. And so Mason Crosby on the upswing in training camp. And so if I were to make an opinion here, form my opinion on the kicking competition at Packers training camp, it's this. It's that if anybody is going to unseat Mason Crosby, and anybody being Giorgio Tavecchio, If anybody's going to do it, they are going to have to do it convincingly. Don't expect the Packers to give Giorgio Tavecchio the job just because he has one more field goal made than Mason Crosby over the course of training camp, or he has a slight edge in field goal accuracy. He is going to have to be significantly better than Mason Crosby in order to win this job. And the biggest reason why is Mason Crosby has 3 years left on his contract. You'll remember just 2 years ago, they gave Mason Crosby a rather generous contract extension a few years ago. That made him one of the higher paid kickers in the NFL. Not the highest by any means, but still making millions of dollars. So I looked it up. Mason Crosby, if they were to cut him, if the Packers were to cut Mason Crosby, he would count $1.8 million this year alone in dead cap money. $1.8 million. And that is just this year. He still has two more years left on his contract after this. So if they cut Crosby, they are still going to have to pay him for two more years after this one. So 3 years total. So that is why Tavecchio would have to be significantly better, because they have to pay Crosby anyway. You might as well pay somebody who's playing for you, if you're going to pay him at all. So that is the reason it is rather unlikely that Tavecchio will come away with this job. I'm not saying it's impossible, but he is going to have to be quite a bit better. Certainly I understand the opinion that if Crosby is really bad, I mean, you're better off cutting him, if he looks like he did last year. And I would agree with that. But Mason Crosby will indeed have to look as bad or as poorly as he did in 2012 to push the Packers to the point where they have to make a move, where they have to make a change. It's going to take a field goal percentage of making an average of less than 2/3 of his kicks like he did last year. Now, not to say that they couldn't make a move at midseason. All of a sudden, if the regular season comes around and Mason Crosby is looking just like last year, he's not only missing field goals, he's missing them by a wide margin. Then who knows? Maybe they saw enough of Giorgio Tavecchio that they could sign him back at midseason, assuming he doesn't sign with some other team. But the way it stands now, I just can't see the Packers, making the change. I think Mason Crosby will bounce back. I'm not saying he's going to be one of the best kickers in the NFL. Maybe he never will be a Pro Bowl type of kicker, but I do think he's better than what he showed last season in 2012. Because another small matter that factors into this whole decision here as well, as I understand it, as the reports indicate, Giorgio Tavecchio does not have quite the leg of Mason Crosby, either from a strength standpoint. Tavecchio's advantage, if he has any, would be on accuracy. That is where that's his biggest selling point, we'll say. That's Tavecchio's biggest selling point. Whereas Mason Crosby has the stronger leg, which really shows up in the kickoffs. I've seen more than one reporter from the Packers who cover the Packers beat say that if Tavecchio were to win the job, that you might even see Tim Mastay do the kickoffs. And I have seen Tim Mastay kick off from time to time in practice. And he actually has a very strong leg, right on par with Mason Crosby, if not better. seriously, Tim Maste at kicking off has as good a leg as Mason Crosby, if not better. Sometimes I wonder why they don't have Maste kick off instead of Mason Crosby. Mason Crosby, not bad, more middle of the pack in terms of NFL kickers, in terms of leg strength and getting that ball to the end zone. So Mason Crosby isn't bad in that, you know, regard by any means. But, you know, Tim Maste seems to be just as good as him. So that's kind of where and how the Packers kicking competition is stacking up. So I wouldn't expect you to see any kicking, at least field goals at practice tonight. Maybe they do kickoffs or something like that. But I would expect it tomorrow. That seems to be the thing they do at family night. They usually have a little bit of a kicking exhibition. Heck, if you're a Packer fan and you watch family night closely and have for a couple years, you'll even remember, didn't they have like offensive linemen kicking field goals last year? For some reason, I remember TJ Lang lining up for some sort of field goal or extra point or something they kind of did just for fun at the end of practice or something like that. But just for fun. It wasn't serious at all. Just giving fans a little bit of a bang for their buck at family night and giving them a chuckle or a laugh. But anyway, you know, other topics going on at Packers training camp. A story that was published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last night or this morning that has gotten a little bit of attention is they've noticed Randall Cobb dropping passes at training camp. And this is something that dates back to last season in terms of sure-handedness and ball security. Randall Cobb has not been at the top of the heap. He has been known to fumble punts and kickoffs. He has been known to drop passes thrown from Aaron Rodgers. Not that he's terrible by any means, but that this is an issue with him. So it has continued into training camp so far, but I guess I would not be alarmed. If I were a Packers fan, and I am a Packers fan, I would not be alarmed. Mason Crosby, I'm done with that conversation. Randall Cobb more than makes up for it, I think, when you think about his versatility and you think of the ways he contributes to the team on returns and receptions. He makes up for the few drops that he has. Now, certainly, nobody wants to see this become a common theme, wants to see this happen more often than it should. And you know, if it gets to that point, we'll address it then. But as of right now, you know, Randall Cobb has a few drops here and there. But if you go and read this article and become all alarmed, just you know, step back for a second. Take a sigh of relief, breathe in, because I don't really think it is going to be a big issue by any means. So I wouldn't worry there. And as we're approaching the 9 o'clock hour here in the Central Time Zone, I did want to touch on one more thing before we end today's show. And that is Greg Van Roten. I don't think he's gotten a whole lot of attention so far at Packers training camp, and I know offensive linemen don't get much attention in general simply because they don't put together any statistics, but I think he is kind of flying under the radar with the way the Packers' backup center position is unfolding. I think Greg Van Roten could be setting himself up nicely for a roster spot and perhaps being one of the top 7 or 8 offensive linemen on the roster. And you sit here and people, I think, know by now that the Packers' backup center situation is a little bit scary. They don't have anyone besides Evan Dietrich Smith that is any reliable right now. And I do see a couple people here and there say, well, they got all these pure centers on the roster, these young guys like Garth Gerhardt and Patrick Lewis. And what you have to realize is, yeah, they've got these guys and they're seeing what they've got. But in reality, the Packers can only keep 7, maybe 8 offensive linemen active on game days. When you only have a 46-man roster, that is the end point. You know, there's a world of difference between training camp, where the roster's at 90 right now, and the regular season, when it's basically cut in half. You know, a 46-man roster on game day. The Packers can only afford to have 7, maybe 8, and they typically don't have 8 offensive linemen active on game days. So they got to find the 7 best offensive linemen. And it's obviously your 5 starters who, you know, we know who those candidates are. But then they basically have to have a backup center in there somewhere, and probably another backup tackle. I mean, you're kind of looking at Greg Van Roten maybe stepping up and being that backup center, because we've talked about this before. Don Barclay has kind of struggled in the early going at training camp, just snapping the football, whether it's under center or whether it's the shotgun. There's been fumbled exchanges both ways, and that's kind of been a sore point for the Packers in the early going. But the Packers have trained Greg Van Roten since last year to kind of be a center. I mean, I'm sure he's training at more than one position as well. You remember last year, Greg Van Roten was actually in the occasional extra tight end, but that was more of a novelty than anything, you know, when they get into a short yardage situation or something like that. He's being trained as a center, and he just seems like he might be the most reliable guy right now, at least compared to Don Barclay. Don Barclay's good, but it just doesn't appear as if he's, you know, he's a serious candidate to play. You know, if anything were to happen to Evan Dietrich Smith, they have to have somebody they can rely on out there. I mean, one fumbled exchange is too many. You know, that needs to be second nature. One fumbled snap is too many in the NFL. You can't afford that. I suppose you can afford it if you recover it, but if the ball is turned over to the defensive side, that is not a good thing. You know, turnovers, there's no bigger indication of victory in the NFL than turnovers more often than not. I mean, the team that wins the turnover battle more than likely wins the game. It doesn't hold true in every case, but man, that is certainly one of the biggest predictors of success. But it's now past the 9 o'clock hour here at Cheesehead TV's Real Bird Central. Thank you all so much for joining us here for another week. Of course, we'll be back again on Monday. We're on air here every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here at Cheesehead TV. Practice once again takes place tonight in Green Bay, so make sure to check that out. We'll have coverage here at Cheesehead TV, and then tomorrow night, the annual family night scrimmage, which is televised, at least statewide. I think they also stream it at fox11online.com, so if you happen to be out of state or even out of the country, check it out at fox11online.com. They do stream the Packers family night scrimmage, which is a really good chance to see the Packers in action. So on behalf of everyone here at Cheesehead TV, on behalf of our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Caribou. We'll see you later, everyone. I leave you today with a song called Bali Munster by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. We'll see you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.